All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We are we're going to get right to it here. Calls are starting to come in pretty heavy, but questions are still light. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all you want to talk about, if you press 1 on your phone right now, I promise I'll get to you. We're either going to record 1 or 2 hours. Just depends on the volume of questions. So let's get to it.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it here on the air. We're going to get to the calls in just a couple minutes. It's that time of year again. I've been telling you we're into the third quarter. Now we're really down to the last month. This is a really good time to get a lot of things taken care of. I've talked a lot about getting your accounting caught up, and we do have a lot of programs to help you with that. But I also want to talk about something I try to remind people of every year. Most people will wait until January, and they'll make New Year's resolutions. And success rate of New Year's resolutions is abysmal, virtually non-existent. People make resolutions, and then that's it. They do next to nothing about them, or they work on them for a week or two, and they stop. The one that I see every year kind of drives me a little nuts is people going to the gym. If you have a gym membership, you almost should just skip the gym in the first 2 or 3 weeks in January, because the place is just a zoo. It's packed with all the people who made New Year's resolutions to get in shape. They join the gym. They pay their money. They buy all their new clothes. They go to the gym for a couple weeks, and then they quit. So the people who are consistent at going to the gym usually just take a break for a couple weeks, because it's not worth being there during all that time. But by the end of January, most of them are gone anyway. Don't do that. Don't make New Year's resolutions. They don't work. Why not start right now looking at this past year? What worked for you in 2015? What didn't work? What do you want more of? What do you want less of? Start making some lists. And then create a plan, or set goals for 2016, not resolutions. Just make a plan and set goals. But here's the more important thing that you need to do, and you need to get this in writing. Getting the goal in writing is fairly simple. Most of our goals, we can boil them down to one sentence, and that's the way they should be. They should be simple. But what's more important, and why most people don't follow through on their resolutions, is they may have taken the time to write down the goal. A lot of people don't even bother doing that. They'll never get anywhere. But the people who take the time to write down the goals, they skip a really important step, and that's writing down why the goal is important. That is much more important than the goal itself. If you just write a goal to get in shape or to go to the gym 2 times a week, or that's the way a lot of people write goals, that's fine. That tells you specifically what you're going to do. But more important is why. Why are you going to the gym? Why are you going to get in shape? Why are you going to eat better? Why are you going to start saving 10% of every settlement? Why are you going to start reading or listening to one audiobook a week? Those are all good goals. Those are all things that should be on your list, but why do you want to do them? And you should spend more time and energy on figuring out why and getting it in writing. And I'll tell you something else. Use really powerful emotional words when you do this. Use really powerful emotional words and feel the emotion when you write them down. And then when you read it, that's another thing you should be doing with your goals that people don't do with resolutions. They don't write them down and then they don't reread them daily or multiple times a day. If it's important to you, how hard is it to do that? Grab it, read it. If you get a really good, emotional, powerful written description of why you want to achieve something, you have a much better chance of succeeding. So start that now. Don't wait until January and do the resolution thing like most people do and then just fail at it. Start now. Create a plan. What if you just set one goal? You know, don't even overdo this. That's another problem. Sometimes people just get too excited about this and they overdo it. Why not just set one? And then really focus on why that goal would be important. And make it fairly short term. Make it something that would take you no more than 3 months. 30 days would be even better. Because what that does is it helps you build momentum. It helps you see that the system really works. If you try a big, long-term goal and something derails you, then you're not going to have as much faith in the fact that this really works when you do this. Why not even a week? And just see the system work. Write it down, come up with some really good reasons why, and then work on it, accomplish it, and do it again. Do one that takes you a week or 2 weeks, and then move up to one that takes you a month. Much, much better to start off slow and build momentum and succeed and learn how to do this than it is to set a bunch of great goals but just be overwhelmed by trying to get to them. This is just a really good time of the year to work on this. Things will start slowing down here a little on the holidays. Take the time off. Freight is going to start slowing down a lot. Weather's bad. There's not that much to do outside. Great time to sit down and start creating your plan. Ultimately, this could become your life plan. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in North Dakota. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are we doing today?
Good. I guess we're looking at an oil sample today, right?
Yep, we're going to look at that first, I guess.
All right. So this is a different sample than I normally look at, but let me scroll through here kind of quick. 30,000 miles on the oil, is that correct?
Yeah, roughly around there. I actually had a little bit of an issue. I bought this truck in July, and whoever changed the oil on it right before I bought it, because I had a fresh oil change in it, apparently the guy that changed it was sick on oil plug day, and I got down to into Nebraska down there, and oil plug fell out pulling into the truck stop. So I ended up refilling the oil after putting about 5,000 miles on it, and I just let it run out to 30,000 from there. So it's probably about 25 on that oil.
Okay. All right. And the sample looks really good. There's nothing in here to talk about. All the levels are normal. Nothing's elevated. Soot looks really good. So this is a really good indication that the engine is functioning properly. So, good sample.
Okay. Yeah, that's off of 05 Acert.
You know, every once in a while we find one of the Acerts that does pretty well. Honestly, if I had to rate the emission engines, and I think the best emission engine we have available today is really the DD15, but the earlier emission engines, I think the Acert was much better than any of the engines with the EGRs. It does tend to burn cleaner, and I don't seem to hear nearly as many problems about them.
Yeah, it seemed to be a really good running engine for me. The other thing I really wanted to talk to you about today was oil filters. You know, is there a better oil filter? Like, I've been running cat filters in here. You know, you pay the extra money. But you know, the way I see it, if I spend a little extra money on a cat filter, it's probably a better quality than some of the other cheaper ones.
Well, it could be. Here's the issue I have with this as far as talking about it on the air. It's kind of like oil. It's very possible that one oil is better than another one, and that there are some really good oils and some really cheap oils. I haven't been able to find a way to prove it one way or another. I've been saying this for years, that if I could ever figure out which oil really was the best oil, I would get behind it and support it. But I can't. I mean, I've had good results with oils from the bottom, you know, the standard run-of-the-mill stuff, all the way up to the super premium oils. I can't find a whole lot of difference. I've always said that I'll run synthetic, but I could run Rotella synthetic and get the same results that I seem to get out of, you know, a high-end boutique synthetic. And I just have not been able to find a way to say, this oil is better, and here's why. Here's the proof. Kind of the same thing with filters. But there's another factor on the filters, and when we get back, I'm going to talk about that. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get back to Brandon in North Dakota. So, Brandon, there's another factor here for me with oil filters, and that is I haven't paid attention to my spin on oil filters since 1995. I actually do just throw the cheapest filter on or just go with whatever my shop uses, because since 1995 I've used bypass filtration. Once I put the EcoPure on the truck, the filters that are on there, they're not doing much of anything anymore. So I just haven't really paid much attention. Now, I do know other people who swear by a certain brand, Baldwin or whatever it might be. But again, I being on the air and doing what I do, I can't just say, I like this filter, without having a reason why, without being able to say, here's the proof, here are the results. So there are things in my life that I just like, and you know, I have kind of a loyalty to that I can't necessarily say why. But when it's something on the air, if I'm going to recommend it, I really need to be able to point out why. And when it comes to oil and filters, I'm not really sure how to do that.
Oh, totally. I understand that. You know, I was just thinking, because on oil filters, you know, it's about the same as a fuel filter. And I know I had an N14 in the past, and if you put a cheaper filter on, and I won't mention the brand, you know, you'd shut the truck off, and you'd have a hard time restarting it, because it would drop fuel, and you'd be sitting there trying to catch prime again.
Those are the kind of things that, for you on a personal level, when you have those experiences, those are the things that lead us to like a certain brand or a product. And I get that. I do that too. But I have a different standard when it comes to something I would recommend. And that's where I really need to be able to say, you know, here's the proof. I saw it. We had 10 other trucks. We tried it. Here are the results. So, yeah, if you have filters that you like and you've got good performance and good results, I would stick with.
Yeah, well, I know the EcoPure is one of the next things on my list for this truck, but you know, I kind of started from the bottom here and working my way up, and you know, I'm putting, you know, changing things as I go. Pittsburgh power mufflers went on. I got a high flow K&M air filter on it. I mean, that made a lot of improvement to that truck, you know.
Excellent. And it looks like we can see the results. The oil sample looks great. And those are the kind of things when you improve airflow in and out of the engine that will make a difference in the oil sample. See, those are the kind of things we can prove. We know that if you put a high-flow muffler and a high-flow air filter, my preferences are Pittsburgh Power on the muffler and Fleet air filter on the filter. When we do that, we can show the results in an oil sample. We have thousands of documented cases where we make improvements and we can show it. And those are the kind of products that I will stand behind and recommend. They're just, you know, I've passed up so much money from oil companies over the years. We've been approached by many oil companies, both big and small, about being a part of the show. But I've always said I just don't know why I would recommend one over another. If I could figure out a way, I would take their money. But I really can't. Let's go to Georgia. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I called you a couple weeks ago about a fuel dilution in my oil sample.
Yeah.
I had O-rings put in the injectors not even a year ago. I think it might have been back in April sometime. Changed the fuel pump on it first of the year. Now my fuel dilution's back, and it's up to a 4, I think it was. But I had the guy pressure test the fuel injectors in the line in the system there and see if it was leaking anywhere, and he couldn't find no leaks anywhere as far as it coming out the top or whatever. But so I don't know if I need to just buy new injectors or what I need to do next on this. He said it might be maybe coming through the rings.
You know, at a level four, I would just wait. Wait a minute. When he said it's coming through the rings,
yeah, he said it might be
mean?
Coming through the ceiling. I don't know, through the cylinders. I don't know how it could be coming through there, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'm a little confused. If we have fuel dilution from the injectors, of course it has to go by the rings to get to the oil. But we have to understand, we have to figure out why we have that much fuel in the cylinder that it's going by the rings. That's kind of an odd statement to make. That's where it's going to get into the oil by getting by the rings. But if the injectors don't leak when the truck is sitting and we get the right spray pattern out of them when the truck is running, we will burn all the fuel in the combustion chamber and there won't be any to get around the rings. So if it's not O-rings, if it's not leaking while the truck's sitting, the other possibility is the tip, the injector itself is malfunctioning, and it's streaming fuel instead of spraying fuel. And when we stream fuel into the cylinder, it's too much fuel, and it's not atomized, and we can't burn it. So that's when we'll tend to get that oil or the fuel that will flood down around the ring. So it's still possible, even though the rings press or the injectors pressure test right, that we still have bad injectors. But you're way too borderline for me to recommend new injectors, because we've just had way too many cases where somebody's at 4, they go out and put new injectors, and they come back and they're 4.5. I've seen it actually get worse. So you're not doing any damage right now. Keep an eye on your oil samples. If you're for a little bit of extra insurance, you could dump in a gallon of Lucas. That'll protect the engine from any fuel that will get into the cylinder. And I would either wait it out and see if it's going to get worse, or if you're in the top end for anything else, you know, if you've got a good shop and they can troubleshoot it. But I would not go in and replace injectors yet.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate them.
All right. And, you know, if you've got oil samples or if you've got some coming up, call me up. We'll go over them and we'll keep an eye on this. But at 4, you're still okay. Let's go to Illinois. Owen, welcome to the program.
Hi. So my question is, I just invested in LendingTree, and I've done some research that shows your interest payments on those are taxed as regular income. Do you have to pay employment taxes on that? And then I've also shown that any write-offs, that's what I figured, and then any write-offs you do, you can carry forward up to $3,000 of the write-offs on the losses. How long can you carry those forward? And those are only deductible to capital gains, correct? Go ahead.
Correct. Yeah. Everything you read, you have a grasp on. You understand it correctly. This is considered interest income, which is the same as if you put money in a savings account and the bank paid you interest. The difference here is you actually get interest most of the time, whereas the banks aren't paying anything anymore. But it's regular income, so it is taxed at your nominal tax rate. So pretty simple, no employment taxes, no capital gain, just regular income tax. If you were to lose money, if somebody were to default on your loan, then correct. If it was less than $3,000, you can write it all off in that year. If it's more than $3,000, you get to write off $3,000 this year and $3,000 virtually forever going forward until you eat up the loss.
Perfect. So that's what I heard. I just didn't know what the time frame was on that. It was kind of hard to figure out that on the internet. So
hopefully there are some limitations, but the odds of you losing, you know, that much money that we'd have to worry about it, I wouldn't. So just know that if you have a loss, you're going to get $3,000 a year. But again, that is against capital gains.
So, perfect. That will work perfectly for me then. So those are the only questions I had. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Yeah, you did a really good job reading and understanding that. The way you laid it out to me was exactly correct. So congratulations. LendingTree is an interesting way to invest. Not for everybody. I think for you it sounds like a great option because you're reading, you're understanding it. You know what the risks are. You can make quite a bit more interest on your money than at the bank. Like, seriously, like 10 times more than you make at the bank today is not all that difficult with, and this is what's called peer-to-peer lending. So it's not even legal in every state. I forget where I was somewhere, Florida, Ohio. We were traveling all over the country, and I was using one of those states as an address. I actually was prohibited from lending money on LendingTree. So there's still some states that don't allow it. Again, not for everybody, but if you know what you're doing, it's a nice part of a good balanced portfolio. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. The website is letstruck.com. The phone number for our Tribe Care team, if you need help with anything at all, you can call us off the air, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Now is the time you should be calling us about taxes and accounting. We have opened up our full-service tax and accounting. And this will be the first tax season that we've opened it up to everybody. Last year we did a very limited run just so we could get the system built and work out all the bugs and make sure we serviced all the customers very well. And now we're opening it up to everybody. But I will tell you that it's something I'm going to monitor very closely. I've been through almost 20 tax seasons, and I know how tough they can be. And at some point, if it looks like we're overwhelming the system, we will stop taking new clients. So if you would like us to do your tax work this year or your accounting or both, we can do that. We can even look back over past tax returns, maybe even get you some money back. But I wouldn't wait. I would call us, get into the system as quick as possible. This is, we're in December, so this isn't too early at all. This is the time you need to be calling. 855-800-FUEL. I'm going to head off to Portland. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Well, I just want to thank you for having a show where people can learn and better themselves with the trucking industry.
You're welcome.
Your staff's been awesome with me. There's a lady named Kim Cockerham. I had issue reaching
yes.
low seating for my wife, and after she helped, everything was been right on. Got approved for financing and everything.
Well, that is fantastic, and I love that feedback. I never hear enough of that, and I have to say that I love what I get to do every day, but I have also been absolutely blessed with an amazing staff. We love the way we built our company. We're virtual. Everybody gets to work at home. Everybody gets to spend time with their family and do the things that are important to them. And, you know, a lot of our team members are working on stuff at midnight some days. And then other days they, you know, are taking care of their family. And we love that environment. But we've just really been blessed with some amazing team members.
Oh, yeah, she's been awesome. They had lost our contact. They never got with us. My wife has disc and bone disease, so we're trying to get a seat for her. But a short thing on us is we started this 3 years ago with the company and then later moved on to a lease, which I know you don't like, but we did that for 8 months with a good company and started clearing $1,300 to $1,500 a week. And just about 6 weeks ago, we went ahead and made a jump and bought our own truck and went ahead and went with a new one for the warranty work.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thanks, sir. And then we signed on with Mercer after hearing all the positive comments and everything through you and your show. So we went out and bought, we have a 2016 Volvo 780, 13-speed, the D13 in it. I'm having one trouble with it. Since we picked this up, we've discovered 3 air leaks. One of the fittings wasn't coated, and then we found 2 more air leaks in the fittings in the top of the airbags. So while down in Dallas, we had some free time, so I went by a Volvo dealer, which is south of Dallas, and took it into the shop because I was still losing pressure in the front system, not on the truck, but you know, on the front gauges. Every 10 minutes, the compressor would run and have to fill back up to 120 pounds every 10 minutes or every 10 miles. Get in there. They had it for a few hours. They said they couldn't find anything wrong with it. I explained that was going on, and also when we sit at nighttime, the compressor runs not as fast, but it does run and have to charge the system back up. They came out and spoke with me and said, well, this is normal.
What?
Yes, sir. That was after the mechanics and the head mechanic came out and spoke with me. And I explained, I said, well, you know, I've had Volvos before with companies. I had a 2013, 2014, and a 2015. And the Volvo never did that.
Normal? Unless so, this is new crazy system I've never heard of, why would that be normal? We've had air brake systems on trucks forever. And the whole point is you want the system to be as leak-resistant as possible. I mean, saying that the air system should leak, and that's normal, is crazy. If it leaks too much, we can't even pass the DOT.
Well,
that's just... And here's another problem with that. If for some reason, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, Volvo has created some goofy system that is designed to leak down, not only will it hurt fuel economy, but we're going to wear out our compressor a whole lot faster.
That's what I explained to him. I said, well, I don't believe this is normal from an electronic background, mechanic background. I said, you're putting a lot of wear and tear on my compressor. And he said, well, they're built for that. And I said, well, that's still not normal. I said,
yeah,
just taking my fuel mileage, I put 18,000 miles on the truck in the last 6 weeks, or maybe about 6.5 weeks. I said, so this is running every 10 miles when we drive. This isn't correct.
No, it's not. That's crazy. That answers like that drive me nuts. You know, this is one of those situations. You have to deal with the Volvo dealer or an independent shop. Now, I will tell you, at some point, if you're not getting satisfaction on a warranty, I would start talking to them about taking it to an independent shop, getting the problem fixed, and billing them for the work. Now, they're not going to like that. They're not going to want to do it, and you may have to make a decision. Do you want to pay for this out of your pocket? Do you want to pay for it and then fight them? Neither one of those answers is good. The real answer is that they should fix this. But in the real world, that may come down to what you have to decide. And I will tell you that when I bought Volvos, when I was in Orlando from 1994 to 2007, I bought almost exclusively Volvo trucks, and I never once, well, I can't say that. There were a couple times, but my results were so poor at the Volvo dealer that I stopped taking my trucks in even for warranty work. When I had brand new trucks, something was wrong. It went to my independent shop. I just paid for it myself, never even asked them to reimburse me. It was worth it. I actually saved money. I'll give you one example. I had a brand new Volvo. First day out, I had a wheel seal leaking. Take it over to Volvo. The dealers hate doing warranty work because it's the least profitable for them, because if you bring a truck in not under warranty, they can basically charge you whatever they want. If it's warranty work, the factory tells them how much they're going to get paid to do it, and it's not much. So they don't like
right.
to do this kind of work. So my truck sat out back for 2 days. So I had a rental truck for 2 days, which is outrageously expensive for a wheel seal. And guess what?
Right.
When it came back, the wheel seal still leaked. So they screwed up the wheel seal putting it in. It started leaking within a couple days. And I said, this is stupid. I lost money on a free repair. I would have been better off to just take it to my shop, who would have finished it in a half a day. I wouldn't have had any rental trucks, and it would have been fixed right. So from that day on...
Right.
I just paid to do my own warranty work at a different shop because it was cheaper than free, as crazy as that sounds. Don't know about the 2016s, but I can tell you that one of the weak points in the Volvo air system, I shouldn't call it a weak point because I didn't always have problems with it, but many times when I couldn't find an air leak on one of my Volvos, it turned out to be a junction block. And on the older Volvos, now the newest Volvo I've ever owned is an 01. And on those trucks, 01 and older, when you walked up to open the driver's door, if you were to look under the cab from the outside and mounted up on the bottom of the cab outside, there was a junction block down there that a lot of airlines ran into. And several
right.
times, that's where I found my problem.
Okay.
Let me get to a break. I don't want to rush on this, and I'll come back. We'll talk about it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Thank you. All right, a quick heads up. You know, we're in a holiday week, and the calls are actually kind of heavy, but questions are light. So I think we're going to wrap up with just an hour today. Actually, I'll tell you what we'll do. I think we've got enough questions that I'm going to do this segment, and then we'll come back and we'll do one opening segment, and that's probably going to be it. We'll wrap it up there. But that way I'll get to all the calls we have right now. So here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Scott in Portland. So, Scott, go ahead.
Yes, sir. So they went all through the truck with their spray bottle like I had already done with soapy water. And
wait a minute.
Good.
Wait. This is after they explained to you that it's normal. If it's normal, why are they trying to fix something they claimed was normal?
Right, and they hit the block that's now moved to the front, under the hood on the front driver's side there on the firewall. So you'll like this. I'm hoping you're sitting for this one. He also stated, now this is his main service manager, that this was a 13-speed truck, and then also the fan uses air to engage. And I just looked at him like he was an idiot. Because I'm running just under 170 degrees while we're running down the road, and we're not shifting, and this is running every 10 minutes, filling the tank back up.
Yeah, and those statements are just idiotic. Come on, does he think you've never driven a truck before? The shifter, the splitter uses so little air, it's not even funny. And even if the fan is engaging and disengaging, it's nothing but a switch. One little pop of air, and the switch is activated. It's not like we're blowing air out through the system. So even on a truck where we're shifting a lot and the fan is coming on and off, that should not cause the compressor to keep coming on.
Well, I made a statement to him. I said, I had the automatic 2015, and that uses a lot of air, and it never filled the tank every 10 miles. And so that was pretty much the end of the service.
Yeah. At the very least, you need to find a new Volvo dealer, and you may really want to consider, having a good independent shop and just paying for this stuff.
Okay. Oh, we did try in Louisville when we were leaving out of Mercer, and the one local place refused to touch it because they weren't getting paid by Volvo.
It's unfortunate. This is why you need to have that relationship. My shop was happy to get the work, knowing that I was going to pay them for it, and I explained to them why, and they love doing that kind of stuff. They got to work on a new truck, and they charged me their regular rates, and I happily paid the rate because they solved my problem, and it was cheaper than using the free warranty. Well, good luck. Call me back. Let me know what you managed to figure out on this. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you tonight? Today?
Good.
I don't know what time it is. Got a question about the ketogenic diet. I've been looking all over the place. I find a lot of information on it, but I was wondering if you had a good, solid resource of where to begin with it.
The most common place I recommend people start is with an audio book called Keto Clarity. So it's written by Jimmy Moore, and not only does he have the book, he's got the number one podcast on the internet, hundreds of episodes. He's got a blog. He interviews all the top doctors and researchers, and if you stick with just his material alone, you could stay busy for a month. And it's okay. Just a really, really great place to start. He's got a good story, too. He, you know, he was 400 and some pounds, I think. He had a twin brother who died young, and he tried every diet on the planet. Nothing ever worked. And he's had amazing success on the ketogenic diet. And like I say, he blogs, he's got a podcast, he writes books. He's done a tremendous amount of research, and he's just got a lot of resources. He also continues to kind of push the limits. I know he's done some testing on, you know, fairly long-term fasting and some of the results he's had there. So really interesting stuff and a great resource to get you started. Are there any specific questions I could help you with?
No, I'm just looking for a starting point. And just like I say, I've done a lot of research online, and you get so many different ways to go about it. And I just wonder where you started from, and, you know, that's kind of how you come about it. And I guess I'll follow the same way. It seems like it's working for you, so.
Yeah, like I say, there's so much information there, and if you stick there, you know, there's two ways to go about this. And in the beginning, I did. I read all of the pro-ketogenic stuff I could find, the people who believed in it, why they believed in it. And I also read all the negative, all the people who said it's a bad idea, and I listened to their arguments. And honestly, it wasn't even close. I mean, when you really objectively look at the information that's out there, it just wasn't even close. So I was convinced. And then once I was convinced, I'm kind of doing, you know, what you're doing now, trying to find a way to get started. This book is a great one. I'll give you another, and I've read a lot of books on this topic, but I'll give you another one that I think kind of balances it out. And let me explain what I mean. Jimmy Moore is very, very heavy into just full-blown ketogenic. And that's good for a couple of things, but primarily you will see really quick weight loss. You will see improvements in all kinds of things, like blood cholesterol numbers, blood pressure, blood sugar, all kinds of things. But in my opinion, after doing a lot more research, I think it's also a little short-sighted in that he doesn't really talk a lot about the quality of the foods you eat. You know, he'll talk about going to a restaurant and, you know, put a lot of bacon on stuff, throw a couple eggs, throw a bunch of butter on it, and that's all good, being ketogenic. But I also did a lot of research and figured out that if we want long-term results, if we want the optimal health we can get, then I really combine kind of the concepts of keto and paleo. So keto is really all about keeping your body in ketosis, eating enough fat, a limited amount of protein, and very, very low carbs so that we stay in ketosis. You could do that and still eat a lot of bad food. You'd see a lot of good results. It's way better than our standard diet. But paleo, on the other hand, doesn't necessarily worry so much about being in ketosis. But paleo is about eating the best quality natural foods from our original diet as possible. So they focus on high-quality proteins, really good fats, grass-fed and pastured animals, you know, more of a natural ancestral diet. And I think combining the two is what really gives you optimal health. So read Keto Clarity, because you're going to learn everything you want to learn about ketogenic diets. Then read a book called Eat the Yolks. And it's by Liz Wolf. And that one will talk more about good, clean eating, whole food. But she still leans toward that balance of macronutrients where we're eating more fat, moderate protein, and really good sources of carbohydrates when we eat them.
All righty. I got one more question for you if you got time.
Sure.
I just recently, I'm a company driver. I work on percentage, so I've talked with my dispatcher, and they're giving me the numbers, fuel surcharge, what the load pays. They're giving me everything so I can be a pretty transparent company I work for. I've been taking those numbers and writing them down. I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, I can, you know, how to combine them where I know what the owner-operators would get, 75% of the load. So, I mean, I can figure out a rate per mile, but what's the best way to track all those numbers where I could have a profit and loss? I mean, should I just do a profit and loss statement? I mean, I could do a real market value of what the truck is worth and figure out a payment and so forth and so on. What's the best way to track all these numbers?
You know, I would, and I'm certainly biased, but I would recommend you use our software. And we do have a lot of company drivers who do that. They treat it like it's their truck. They have access to almost all of the numbers, and they just enter it into our software the way they would if it were their truck. And most of them then go on to buy their own truck and continue using our software. So you could write a spreadsheet. You could go find other software. You could certainly try ours. And ours has a 30-day trial. So, you know, try a couple options and see what you like best.
All right. And one more question real quick. The scan gauge, when I bought that, I remember you saying that they would do updates for it for $25, whatever. Now, I'm sure it's gone up since you guys have gone through this process, but that was a couple of years ago. Has there been an update on these at all since then, since you released them? Or?
No, not an update on ours. What we were talking about was if somebody bought one prior to ours, if they had a standard scan gauge, we would update it to the KR specs for $25. And I'm pretty sure they'll still do that, but you can just give our TribeCare team a call and they'll tell you what you need to do. If you have a scan gauge KR, though, you're set. There's the music. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rupp. All right, everybody. We're going to do one segment here. I've got a couple calls already screened and a couple more on hold. Well, it looks like a whole bunch on hold. But we don't have enough to do an entire hour, and right now I'm short one segment on another recording. So we're going to do one segment, and then we're going to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow, though, and we'll do it again. But here we go on one more segment.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, technology, taxes, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. We'll talk about whatever it is you want to ask or talk about here on the show. All you have to do, pick up the phone and call us. I'm going to get right to the calls today and see how many we can get to. We're going to start off in California. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question about gliders. I heard you talk about them in the past, but I was in and out of the truck. And anyway, I'd like to know something. What is a glider?
That would be an airplane with no engine. Just kidding.
Okay.
But that's why we. That's why we refer to them as gliders. What it is really is a brand new truck and chassis. So we have a brand new cab, interior frame, front suspension, and if we're talking about a true glider, it would only have frame rails in the back. There would be no differentials, no suspension, nothing. Just frame rails sticking out. And it's built in the same factory as a brand new truck, comes right down the same assembly line. It just doesn't ever get a drivetrain put in it. Now, what is more common today is what's called a rolling glider. Same thing, except it does have rear suspension and rear differentials. It just doesn't have an engine and transmission. Now, the history of gliders goes way back. When I got into the industry 30 years ago, virtually every truck dealer you pulled into would have a glider kit sitting there. And it was almost always used for an accident or a rollover. Or sometimes the cabs were so bad back then that long before you ever wore out the driveline, the cab was just junk. They were rusting. They were a mess. So these would either be used where I would have an old truck and the cab was just trash, but I wanted to keep my driveline. I'd go to the dealer, they'd swap out engine and driveline, and I'd drive off in a new truck. Or a rollover accident, you know, a major accident. Now, they had a reputation back then for being kind of cobbled together because dealers didn't necessarily build a lot of them. They built one here or there, and they didn't always put them together the best way possible. So they didn't have that great of a reputation. Now, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, nobody was talking about gliders, and you couldn't find one anywhere, partly because the trucks were getting much better quality, and there wasn't a big reason to use them anymore. You might see one once in a while in a rollover, but they almost disappeared. Back in the mid-2000s, we started looking at gliders for the reason of getting around all the emission problems. So the idea now being we can take a brand new cab, chassis, frame, suspension, all that stuff, put the glider is an exemption to the emission rules. We can build a glider with any year engine we want, and all we have to do is meet the emission standards of the engine year, not the truck year. So we can title the glider as a 2016, but we can put a 1994 engine in it, and all we have to do is meet the emission standards from 1994.
Would that work in the state of California?
No. With one possible exception that we're working on. If you have, say, a late 90s, early 2000 pre-emission engine, and we outfit the truck with a DPF, and we are working on some research on that, we know it's not ideal because we'd rather not have the DPF, but I'd rather have a pre-emission engine with a DPF than an emission engine with a DPF. And we're doing some research on one step further. We are working, and I'm working with Pittsburgh Power on this, to design a DPF system that we could divert around. So we build a glider, pre-emission engine, or we could do this on older pre-emission trucks too. We put the DPF on, and we have a secondary exhaust system. So anytime we're in California, we will absolutely connect to that DPF. We're not trying to cheat anybody. But anytime we're outside of the state, we would divert around it and run through our standard exhaust. And that would do a couple things for us. One, it would improve our fuel economy when we're not using the DPF, and it would make our DPF last a lot longer.
Yeah, that sounds like an ideal solution. Ooh la la, I like that. I talked to Mama. She, you know what, we were both born and raised out here. I don't want to move. I looked here, I looked there. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. Yes, dear. Okay.
Yeah.
So. I'm curious about it, you know. Anyway, okay. That's why I asked about Cali. So, you know, I do run out here a lot, and I'm looking forward to that CMC thing. And I just want to tell you, I've learned a lot from the program, and I appreciate what you've done. And I'm a short-time listener, and I've been out here 5 years as a career change. But it's been interesting. Well, I wish I was a night owl because I'd listen to you during the week, but I'm kind of living for the weekends. And it just so happens today, I've stopped waiting for my delivery, so I got, you know, no connection interference with this mobile phone.
Got it. Excellent. Well,
anyway.
Welcome to the tribe. Can't wait to see you at the CMC, and I'll give you some good news. By the CMC, Pittsburgh Power is a big part of that event. Bruce Mallinson and I will have some pretty exciting things to announce there, and we should have some answers on building some California-compliant gliders that will be the best possible option in California. It's a project Bruce and I are working on right now. Let's go to Texas. Alec, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mr. Rutherford. I had a Lisa was going to go ahead and transfer you over a copy of my fuel gauge just to take a look at. And also, I did, if you've got time, I did have a quick warning as far as on the warranty for Freightliner.
Sure,
I recently got out of a 2012 Cascadia, and the DPF system went out on it about 1,200 miles before the warranty did. Long story short, after 2 weeks in the shop, they were trying to bill me $35,000, saying that it was an EGR part that caused the problem. And then when they couldn't explain to me how that happened, they tried to tell me, oh, well, it doesn't matter because your idle time is at 49%, so we're not going to cover it. Now, after they couldn't find any place that they could show me any kind of a idle threshold, the company that I'm contracted to went on ahead and went to bat for me and got it all covered. But I'm thinking that might just be the size of our company that was able to get that done. So people that have the newer Detroit motors that have that, what they call the one box on it, if it goes out, they will check your idle time and try to fight you on the warranty on that.
Wow. Let me jump in there real quick, and I appreciate the heads up on that. That helps out. I've never been a fan of warranties. I've said it many, many, many times. And here we are in, you know, the last 2 days, I've had two calls, one a brand new Volvo. They did everything they could to get around warranty work on an air leak, even claiming that an air leak was normal. And then they went on with all kinds of other goofy excuses. And now we've got these manufacturers saying they're going to base your warranty on whether or not you have too much idle time. That's crazy. So, this is a big part of why I just don't put a lot of faith in warranties.
Well, right, but at $35,000, it's worth a two-week-long fight, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy, crazy. Hey, yeah. Real quick, what is your truck name in fuel gauges?
It's the 163458, and then space and Swift.
Huh, for some reason, I'm not getting it to come up. Is there a specific question I can help you with? It's not coming up in our system with that number.
I picked up the truck on 1 September, and I've had it now for, well, almost 90 days. And I'm just trying to get lightweight, because, I mean, I pull Reaper, and I'm heavy everywhere I go. I mean, when I'm at 79.5, I'm, like, throwing a celebration because I can fill up my tanks. Trying to find lightweight options that will work on a 2016 that I can go on ahead and put on the truck to try and improve where I'm at.
Got it. Two things I would recommend then that will add very, very little weight and will clearly give you an improvement right off the bat. Three things. Fleet air filter. Four. Fleet air filter. Oh, no. Forget the muffler. Fleet air filter, air tabs, and flow below. And you can check out those on our website in the store, letstruck.com/store. And the music's playing. I've got to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up there. I don't have enough questions today, so we'll come back and do it tomorrow. It's a holiday weekend. We seem to have a lot of calls on the line, just not a lot of questions today. So we'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks.